I think when you're younger, you want to identify yourself as something, you know? And I think when you're older, it's more about principles and values rather than self-identification, you know?
Das ist der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast, der Podcast rund um Nachtleben und Clubkultur.
Wir sprechen mit DJs, Türstehern, Tänzern, Clubbetreibern und anderen Nachtmenschen.
Mein Name ist Gesine Kühne.
Und ich bin Jakob Töne.
Herzlich willkommen beim Electronic Beats Podcast.
Hi, it's me, Jakob Töne, and welcome to another episode of the Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast. When I started listening to electronic music, I really enjoyed tracks by artists that had a weird, spacey vibe and vocals. Seth Troxler is the living example of this, combining the weird, arty, geeky world and the real world. But how did the boy from Detroit become one of the most iconic figures in the electronic music scene? I have the pleasure to ask him that and to speak about the meaning of being a record collector, what makes a party so special, and what does technology need to do to reflect the in-real-life experience of a dance floor. But before I give too much away, let's hop into the conversation with Seth Troxler. Hi, Seth, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, long-time listener, first-time caller. Happy to be here.
You told me you will speak, or you have your radio voice out there.
Yeah, I have this funny, my voice is actually quite nasally, but I sometimes when I do radio, I'm like, hey, this is Seth Troxler, how are you guys doing? Yeah, like this is really a kind of American pseudo, 90s telecom voice. Actually, when I was in school, I took some radio classes.
And, really?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you have to do all these. Kind of, I can't remember much of it, but.
But did you do a proper radio show back then, or?
Yeah, no, it was like this class. You had to, it's like in school. It wasn't on the actual radio, so.
Yeah.
It's like mock radio.
But well, nice. I mean, it gave you the experience and the technique that you have your radio voice.
No, I
had
the radio
right
voice. Yeah, my dad. I had a radio show for a long time called Fade to Black. He still has like an internet radio show, but it used to be on their actual radio when I was a kid. And that was a thing.
Nice.
He has a really good radio voice. He's great at communications.
Maybe that's where your voice comes from. Partly.
No. He's got like this
not
cool,
there yet.
He's got this cool like black guy voice, you know.
But maybe it's still coming.
I'm like, no, I'm waiting for my voice to drop, 36. waiting for my beard and voice to kind of mature.
Until puberty kicks in.
Yeah, one day. Full effect. One day, we can only dream. One day, actually, I was talking to Matt Deere, and I was like, Matthew, when did your voice get so deep? He's like, you know what, Seth? I willed it that way. That's it. I was like, cool. All right.
Nice. Yeah. Seth, a lot of people associate you with a quite partying lifestyle. And nowadays, or like the last year, has been very much the opposite. How is it for you?
Yeah, I'm sober for some time. I'm married. I have a kid. It's kind of funny. Like the persona I think I built for myself was very much almost a caricature. I mean, I can be quite wild and party, but I think it was personified a bit more than the character that I actually am. It's kind of funny. I was with Tiga, Tiga, DJ or whatever.
From Canada. Yeah,
from Canada. We're really good friends. And he was like, Seth, he's like, the funniest thing is, he's like, everyone thinks you're really crazy and far out and you wear these far out clothes. He's like, but actually you're pretty stiff. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, it's a great, illusion. But no, I can be really fun on occasions, but I am actually quite serious person. And,
I mean, you've been straightforward a couple of times and we're going to speak about this later as well.
Yeah.
But how was it to settle down then?
I mean, this time off was really incredible. I made more music, I think, in the past months than I did in like 10 years, which was pretty great. Made so much music and had a family and readjusted my priorities and goals in life and really found a new inspiration to do what I do and why I'm doing it and what I want to do for the future. So that's really cool.
Great. And you settled down on Ibiza, is that right?
Yeah, Ibiza. I'm here a little bit.
In Berlin? Yeah.
We have an apartment here. I've been in Ibiza for a while, but we're going to become Swiss very soon. My wife is Swiss. So
okay.
My baby is Swiss. My son is Swiss. So my last name is Swiss, I figure.
Troxler?
Troxler is Swiss, yeah.
Really?
From Bern, yeah.
So it's basically Troxler.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Troxler.
Yeah, that's my name.
Oh, my Swiss accent is really bad. Yeah. But you said you spent some time on Ibiza. Must be quite bizarre to be on the island when everything is down, like no events, no partying.
Yeah.
How was it for you?
I mean,
how was the island?
I've been living in the island for some years already. I have like an apartment there, like a flat or whatever. And I mean, Ibiza is not this crazy party place like Berlin is. Berlin, you can go out and party literally from Monday to Monday and not have to go home in some ways, or before pre-pandemic Berlin. Where Ibiza, everything closes at 5 and there's really only like 4 or 5 big clubs, and then there's not really anything else. It's not like crazy after parties or these crazy, back in the day you could do villa parties and all that stuff, but all that's illegal now. So it's kind of like this holiday place, you know, it's kind of turned into this holiday place that happens to have like 5 massive clubs, you know, like, you know, 10,000 people, 5,000 people, you know, so it's kind of like this funny thing. But I found the summer to be really fantastic. You know, it's the first time in all the years I've been, you know, I've been a resident at DC10 for 10 years or 12 years, considering the 2 years it's been closed. Yeah, it's like the first year that I was able to do all the stuff that all my friends got to do all the time, like go to beaches and it'd be like a kind
take
of
a boat ride,
yeah,
to Formentera.
Hang out at the beach with my kid. You know, it was like this really idyllic kind of view of the island that I had always missed due to traveling. So it was kind of refreshing to be like almost like a tourist in my home, you know, and like do all this stuff. I'm like, wow, all these people are like, you've never been here. I'm like, no, this is great. You know, so that was a lot of fun. But yeah, it's, again, it's just like taking time to readjust and look at life from a different perspective and lens. I think both from the pandemic and from the fact of being a new parent. You know, parenting is a funny thing. Everyone's like, your life changes so much. And it doesn't really. Just your perspective changes on a lot of things, and your drive and motivations for things change. And I think that can be a real drive for some people, and it can be, for some people, something that kind of knocks them out. It's a real pivot moment, very much like the pandemic, you know. Either you pivot and strive and, you know, really reanalyze and kind of create the best out of the situation, or you kind of go into like a weird kind of spiral and, like, you know, kind of like can't deal with it. So yeah.
Do you remember the first time you stranded on the island, on Ibiza?
The first time I landed in Ibiza? Yeah. Definitely. I became the resident at DC10. It's the first time I ever
That was the first time.
Yeah, I was playing at the club. They had shut down for a year and they had reopened. They had came and like scouted me, I guess. And I was kind of like a Berlin guy. I was had a residency here at Club de Genere, and it was like me and my friends were all living in Friedrichshain, at Frankfurt Alley, actually. And then we were all, like, everyone back then in Ibiza, Berlin was really anti-Ibiza and all, but no, we don't.
It's so mainstream, yeah, it's so commercial.
Yeah. No, it's just awesome and hot. And yeah, they had the club bed shut down, and before Dice and Luciano and these guys were the residents, and they had moved on to do other things. And then they had scouted Jamie and I, and they're like, hey, would you like to be the new resident at our club? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Talking about Jamie Jones.
Then. Yeah, Jamie Jones, yeah. And yeah, I was like, yeah, cool. And I was like, it's another club. And everyone was like, oh, it's so crazy, you're going to be at. And I was like, oh, it's a club. And I think that kind of helped me also within playing there, because I never had an idealization of Ibiza or what I should play or how I should be or whatever. I just came with the same attitude of being a Detroit kind of Berlin DJ. And, you know, I just moved from Detroit and now I've been in Berlin and just took that kind of ethos and that kind of, you know, energy with me to Ibiza and kind of that party attitude when I was a kind of young radical. And it, you know, it really kind of formed my career, and then I became one of those commercial Ibiza DJs, I guess. No, but still playing the same underground music. So, yeah.
So when you're getting back to Frankfurt Allee nowadays, what they still say is Seth Troxler really went commercial then.
Yeah, I don't care what people say. I play great music. So, and you know, I'm one of the only few DJs who, you know, plays some, you know, very big events, and also still plays Robert Johnson and Time Warp and all, you know, Sun Waves, you know, Club Visionaire, all these things still. So it's, you know, it's 1 foot in the river and the other foot in the coal, so I guess in the lava or the fire.
But Time Warp is a great example, because there are two worlds matching in one night, or like, let's say, on one weekend. Because I remember I've been there sometimes, and I think we also met but like Time Warp, you meet hundreds of people.
Time Warp is a literal time warp. You
know? Yeah, also feels like a big class trip. And you have this huge, crazy indoor festival with thousands of people, and then you enter the after party in the secret
the
little
Zimmer
club.
Is the best. It's funny. There's like to go from 25,000 people to 500 people.
Like
there's
a maximum.
Maximum. Like, really, like really like 200 people in there. Really. It's like it's a staff party. It's funny to go. Like there's no after parties for the whole festival except for that. And yeah, and then I mean those have been some of the most amazing times in that little space. You know, but it's like the real Rave Olympics time warp. You know.
I remember one time when I entered then the after party and you were playing like basically for 40 people because was like the beginning or the let's say transition time from the festival area to the little club and you were playing Italo disco and was really. Let's say it was really nice because it really softened you down from the hard techno you've been.
That's the whole thing, you know? I think a DJ's job is to play whatever fits the environment and the time, you know? And if you're limited by playing just one sound or, you know, kind of classify yourself in one kind of category, I don't think you're able to play as many scenarios, which is something in my career that's been a bit more open, is the fact that I play so much music. I'm a collector at the end of the day. I mean, I collect so many things. It's funny, there's recently this podcast with Jeff Mills and Tego, which is really incredible. If anyone hasn't heard it, Last Night on Earth or whatever. Last Party on Earth, I think.
Last Party on Earth.
Yeah. The Jeff Mills one is incredible. But he goes into this whole thing about collecting, you know? And I think any real, most DJs or the art of DJing is really the art of collecting, you know, and he kind of touches on that. And that's something I firmly believe, you know, I mean, my whole life I've collected things. When I was a kid, I collected rocks, I collected baseball cards, I collected everything. And it just at some point morphed into records and art and other weird, like trinkets and like weird stuff. I collect all over the world. I just buy weird things. And it's kind of like a weird obsession that many people have. But when you're a real collector of music, like I have 10,000 records at my house, it's kind of like collecting artifacts, you know? Yeah. You know, like this little, you know, I buy things that like are so random and people like, you know, it's always funny when I go to Rush Hour and all these other places, they're like, they're like, I always come out with these huge boxes of records with so much different music and they know me for that. So they always pull me all this different stuff. But if it's a good sound, it's something that I kind of have to have and this weird kind of tick in my mind. I'm like, ooh, that's so peculiar. That's cool. Or that can fit this moment or that moment. You know, I always said like a great DJ can either play a funeral, a bar mitzvah or a rave. You know, it's like whatever moment in time, there's a perfect song for that moment, you know, whether it's lounging in your house, a moment of sadness, a moment of happiness, there's always a perfect sound or song for every moment in time. And if you're a DJ, that's your job is to find those moments.
Sounds like you had a lot of scenarios in your head and you already experienced a lot of scenarios.
I've experienced a lot of lives, a lot of tragedy, a lot of hope and happiness, many things, you know, and you know, I often don't listen to music when I travel or do any things, but you know, I think for many emotions, I've always found music to be the conveyor of emotion because I find myself to be like, I'm not so openly emotional, you know, in some ways quite closed, but I've always found through music, it can express the emotions that I can't really find myself or the words or the feelings for. And then I find those feelings in different songs. And you know, that's always been like a way for me to express myself.
Sounds very, very decent, I'd say.
Yeah, or like limiting, you know?
But I think when you, or you said it initially that you don't want to limit yourself to a specific sound and then play it all over again. You don't give a shit about the environment. I think then you become more and more stiff brand that you can't escape from at the end.
I mean, it's good and bad, you know, because like in some ways, people like to, you know, what it says on the tin, right? You know, it's like, all right, I'm going for Club Mate because I know what it is, right? And I guess when you come to see me, you're like, oh, let's see what he plays tonight, you know, which is kind of good and bad for my career, you know? Like CJs who just play one thing, you know, if you play hard techno, they're like, oh, you know, because people like to identify themselves by something, right? And they're like, okay, I believe in this, I'm into this, and I'm only into this. That's cool, you know, but like, you know, if some nights you're like, oh, we're going to go hear Seth play and I'm playing like something that you're not expecting, then some people are disappointed. Where other people, I've had a lot of fans over the years who are like, they really enjoy that because they're like, but also I'm kind of like Ricardo in that sense where, you know, it depends on the night, you know. It could be like the best night ever, or it could be kind of like, you're like, oh, it's okay. But other times it's like, whoa, it was fucking magic, you know. But it depends on the mood and the people. There's so many different things to really create that significant moment, you know. I think, remember the last time I did Panorama Bar right before the pandemic closed, we closed before the downstairs closed and played like 18 hours, and it was like crazy. It was a crazy, crazy experience. And but all the, there's so many different factors have to go into really creating that moment, you know. And I think that's artistry, you know. If you play 2 hours and you play the same set every weekend,
yeah,
and you know, you're like a pop artist, it's like going to a concert and you hear the same song.
It's a show, then.
It's a show. You know, yeah. People can count on hearing certain songs, and that's cool, you know. But I think the artistry within DJing is to read moments and, you know, and play off of the situations that are in front of you, you know, and trying to read that situation right and get that kind of flawless kind of synchronicity and flow within the fans and you know, try to get that.
Speaking together. About to synchronize with the audience, I mean, over the last 2 years, there were lots of stuff going on in virtual reality on the internet and not in real life, as the pandemic didn't allow any real parties where you can really connect. Yeah, what do you think about the involvement that everything turned into basically live stream? Do you enjoy playing live streams, for example?
I don't really. I'm not so into playing live streams. I did a few, you know, for friends and other people who asked me. I mean, I think the real thing with electronic music, and as clubs and things are, you know, parties are reopening, it's the connectivity of within people, you know? And you can't really do that the same way in a virtual space, you know? I love, you know, bodies next to each other, sweating and randomness in a toilet. And like, you know, that experience is really hard to recreate. It's funny, I'm good friends with the people from Rockstar Games and Grand Theft Auto and all this stuff.
Yeah, I was about to build the bridge to
collaboration. It's like, no, we're friends and like whatever. And like, they come to Ibiza quite a lot. And I remember they were in Ibiza and they had like a whole team there and they were trying to figure out, how do we put this energy into a game, you know? And we're like, we're like talking about it. And I'm like, well, that's what makes clubbing so incredible and unique, in the sense that it is a situation that you can only really experience in real life. And we were talking earlier about the old club days here in Berlin. You know, I first came in 2004 and, you know, I was German and it was more raw. Or like when I was going to raves back when I was a kid in Detroit, and it was like fucking raw and dangerous. And like, there's like, there's a certain energy that you're like, fuck, I could die tonight. I'm, you know, it's like a whole thing, you know, like
makes,
you know,
it more spicy. I'd
yeah,
say.
That spiciness, you know, you can't really put that in a video game, you know, the fear of like, I could get stabbed, but that's going to this rave, you know? And you're like, you know, running up some like back alley and the police are breaking in, you know, it's like a real visceral experience, where in a game, it's incredible that you could experience the music and have some kind of joy in your house and even kind of speak with people and kind of have some type of communal interaction, you know, as this kind of TechnoNet, the Advent thing. I think he's done really well with that. And there's a few other of these techno club things that they have done that I think people are kind of like into, and they go in and they have the avatar. But I mean, until I think we get into a real virtual reality experience, you know, maybe like 20, 30 years, almost in a sense like a Black Mirror, where you can really, I mean, who's to say that we're not living in an already augmented virtual experience? I mean, I'm a simulation theory guy. So like, this whole experience that we call life could already be a semi-augmented experience, somewhat like the Matrix, right? So if that is a thing, and if, let's say, we get to the synchronicity point where, you know, there is no bridge or kind of difference between the augmented reality and the reality that we live, possibly with glasses or other things, then I think that connectivity or those experiences could be easier felt. But in the current state of technology and where we are in the sense of living in an augmented world, I think there's still a long way to go to kind of be able to feel that real connection between a digital space and a real experience.
What was the initial reason then for you and also other artists and basically the whole Circo Loco crew that you're also part of, kind of as a resident for a decade, more than a decade now? What was the reason then to collaborate with Rockstar and to basically have a joint venture now with Grand Theft Auto?
The owner of Rockstar, Sam, he's a real big fan of clubbing. He likes to go to clubs. He loves going to Circo Loco. It's like his favorite place. And the crew, they're there almost every Monday. You know, he comes for a couple months in the summer, and he loves the experience. He's at Time Warp. He goes everywhere. You know, he's been into music, and Grand Theft Auto has always had this great lineage of music. I think from the very beginning, you know,
the radios
and everything.
Yeah.
It's always been really cool music, and he loves clubbing. You know, he loves it. And he's out. He loves the experience. He loves the energy. He loves the randomness of everything. So I think just there was a natural kind of evolution between the relationship of him and Antonio, who runs Circo Loco and the club. Yeah, and through their kind of relationship, they started the joint venture with the record label. Butch and I do some A&R work and some other stuff and kind of some consultancy and like help out with some things. And it just became this thing, you know, and hopefully there's some new music coming that's really cool as well. And it was just like, I think that's a natural evolution.
I mean, you've also contributed a single in May.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me pronounce it right. Lumartes?
Lumartes, yeah.
Lumartes.
So Lumartes is really fun. I got like a tattoo of it on my arm. So Lumartes is kind of like this gang I'm in.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's in there?
Well, it's a big gang. But when I first started coming to Ibiza, I was like kind of whatever, some years ago, I was like hanging out and I was like having an okay time, but I really like, well, things were like, you know, villa parties and other stuff. And I was like, this is all right. But I'm like more of a real raver. Right. And then I had met some kids who, this guy Alexis, actually, he took me, we were at Cocoon and I was like hanging out and I was like, this is fun. But like, I was still looking for my rave crew. Right. And he was like, yo, I want to show you something. And there was a group of people who had been going every Monday to DC10 and Circo Loco and Cocoon. And then they'd have this after party. And there's a group of about 40, 50 people. And they called themselves Lumartes. Lumartes is Lunes and Martes, which is Monday and Tuesday mixed together. And they're like, that's where the magic happens, the mix of the days, right?
Yeah.
And every day they would meet the same spot after DC10 on the Cocoon dance floor. And then from there had this after party. And then after I met this whole Spanish crew of tattoo artists, painters, and all the people who actually worked on the island. There was like all the workers, right? Who ran
Well, the creative people.
Yeah, it was all the creative people and the workers. And the people were like, this was really fun. The fun, like they were really active and they do all this like kind of performance stuff. And like, they were just really funny. And once I met them, then my whole experience on the island changed. And it became this kind of more local, like free old Ibiza thing. And then when making this thing, this song for the compilation, actually my roommate, my old tour manager, Hector, he was living with me. Because I was out of Europe the whole pandemic and I gave him my house, right? I was like, look, here's, you know, you can stay in my house for free the whole time. And he lived there for the whole time that there's lockdown and everything. And I was away. But at the beginning of the lockdown, we were kind of together and I was working on this song. And I was like, Hector, come in here and like kind of like talk about, you know, what is this kind of ethos? And like the whole song in Spanish kind of goes on about liberty and, you know, respect and all this other things and, you know, no corruption and like, you know, the principles of that crew. And that was like the kind of basis of reading the song. And also the start of me making so much new music. I have so much music coming. I think I made like 30, 40 tracks or something like that.
Oh, crazy. And,
yeah.
So there's an album coming.
Maybe. I don't know. I make a lot of stuff that doesn't come out. We've got to have a new album coming from Lost Souls of Saturn that's really interesting. We did this augmented reality comic that's like the synesthesia-based comic that the soundtrack of the album in each of the panels it kind of goes through, and it's like the kind of creation story of the kind of alien story that we had from the first album that was about this cube of Saturn, you know, this dark cube that kind of creates the holographic universe that we live in. And we had the installation in the Saatchi Gallery and did all that other stuff. And the comic kind of continues that. So it's cool. We have like some collaborations with Proto Martyr. It's like this, it's like one of my favorite kind of punk bands.
Yeah, I know them.
Yeah, yeah. So we got Joe from Proto Martyr and the guitarist actually to play on the album. And then we have my old friend Addy from Footprints on there and some other really cool collabs as well. And it's just like really out there, fucking like super out there music. And then I just did a bunch of stuff. I did a collaboration with Diplo actually, and Desire, you know, the girl, and From Italians Do It Better. And then just did a bunch of remixes. Bros and I did some more tracks, and I just did a bunch of stuff, you know, kind of field testing everything and seeing what I like enough to put out. I've always made music, but you know, for me to put out something, it has to really, I have to really
work on it.
Not really work on it. I just have to really, everything I do, it takes me about a day or two, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So very niche too.
I'm fast, you know, and yeah. I think once you start micro editing stuff is you lose a lot of the flow.
Yeah.
But I also believe firmly in kind of like less is more and only put out stuff that you, that's like timeless, right? And if it's not timeless, if it's like a cool, whatever, play it in clubs or whatever, give it to your friends, but it doesn't need to come out on record, you know? If something's really good, then I'm like, okay, this is good to put out.
As you just said, timeless, I had in mind, because I think it's also your voice from the track Time.
Yeah.
It's Tom Trago.
Yeah, we did that one together, yeah.
Yeah, I had...
That was a sub-band.
Usually I had your voice.
We made that one together.
I was sub-band.
Yeah. We made that here in Berlin, actually.
Besides all you've done in the studio that you've been talking about, you've been also launching a new, let's say, dance TV, Dream Access TV.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I haven't done so much programming myself, like my own programs, because I've been kind of busy with the baby.
But maybe that's where we can circle back to the very beginning of our conversation, where you told me that you went to like radio class. Programming.
The whole thing is about programming. I mean, it's really a collaboration with my longtime collaborator and friend Aaron Kulik. Dream Access TV is a kind of ode to public access television. Public access television was this idea in the 80s and 90s, even the 70s, where in America they had this like a local television channel where anyone could have a TV show, right?
Yeah.
And Twitch had come to us about doing a programming, and like I was like, oh, like, I don't want a DJ on Twitch. That's fucking lame, right? So then I came
up with... It would be another live stream.
Live stream that I have to do every week, right? And I was like, I'll stop. I didn't want to do that. And then I came up with this idea. I was like, wow, it'd be incredible to make this like ultimate come down TV, you know? Something that's like not too in your face, that's random enough, kind of like... Adult Swim, but like a bit more random, a bit more some cooking, some weirdness, all this stuff. And Aaron, who's like really the visual embodiment of my mind, Aaron Kulik Visuals, he's always done the visuals for my work, did the film for Lost of the Saturn, incredible artist based here in Berlin, but also guy from college. We've known each other since college, from Detroit. We're like really, yeah. really old friends. So I went to Aaron, we came up with the whole idea. And then I went to all these people, came up with the programming, different shows. And then Aaron's kind of just turned it into this really weirdo show. But the long-term vision, because it's like a six-month project, is once we collect all this footage and do all this stuff, is turning it into an art project where it's going to be like this constantly running weird television that's going to be on the internet. So at any point in time, you can kind of tune in like on the website and just watch something really weird, which I think at some point everyone needs in their life, you know?
But that's the character Seth Troxler again.
Yeah, no, that's like,
oh, is
that's
the real Seth Troxler.
I'm a strange art person, right? I'm really, even all these kind of funny videos I had ever done, like the naked video or the bats or all these things, they're all kind of tied to different periods or moments. And the bats obviously is from
an interview from 2010.
But that thing and the Miami thing, that's from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's a caricature. The naked thing was off this thing, this guy Stefan Stegmeister, who's this Austrian Viennese designer, big graphic designer from the 90s. He did this campaign where he got naked and launched his new firm. So all these things, like everything I've ever done, if you like really pay attention, has these small little details of different things that you can reference them to. Like almost every single thing that I do has kind of some small art history referential point, you know? And that's the thing where it seems very random or kind of wild or whatever.
Yeah.
But actually it's like kind of random in the sense of like, I'm not like really putting it together and like, okay, we have to do this. But also it's kind of like, because I read a lot and there's so many different points that I find really interesting. It's a rehashing and reinvention of a lot of different kind of memorable points that have happened in time, you know? And people who, I guess, aren't, I don't say not as cultured, but aren't as geeky and kind of weird, don't get the points. But if you're like, especially Lost Souls of Saturn, every single thing has a reference point. It's like, it's a deep rabbit hole you can get in. We even put out this book. I should have brought you guys some copies that has like, it's all in like Morse code. And like, it's like you have to decode all it. It's like, it's pretty intense actually.
Maybe there's a Reddit thread where somebody or a group is decoding everything.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing we put out there, it's starting, Like, I'm really into the KLF as well. And the KLF, you know, everything's about the Luminized Trilogy, and it's all that. And with Lost Souls of Saturn, everything we've ever done has a documented reference number, like every performance, every, like, it's crazy. It's like, it's all in the book. I have some here in Berlin. I'll send some over to you guys.
Great.
It's funny. It's also in augmented reality, the book.
Okay.
But it's like, you want to go down the rabbit hole of what Seth Troxler is, then you might find yourself a bit more freaked out than just seeing me kind of like dance around and be a funny guy.
Or maybe more open afterwards.
Yeah. You're like, wow, this is far out.
Yeah. You said there are some weird stuff, but you also mentioned some cooking going on in TV.
Yeah,
there's the show called Shit Mandy Cooks.
Yeah, Mandy Indigo, great DJ and a friend of mine. From Thailand. She's got a cooking show on there. I was supposed to be doing kind of some cooking show stuff, but again, I had a baby and I was just like, babies are so much work, people. Like,
yeah.
It's the best experience, but the most, I haven't slept. Actually, that's a lie because I sleep on the weekends when I go to DJ, but when I'm at home, I haven't slept more than like 3-4 hours at a time in 4 months. It's incredible, but it's, you know, it's tiring. So when you try to balance that and do your job and other things, it's a really crazy thing. Like, I'm right now, I have to go at some, like, a half hour, and my wife has to sing, and we're like, she's just an opera singer at the commercial opera here, and her balancing going back to the opera and me being a DJ and having a baby is like a real, yeah, it's a real juggling act.
But also sounds like a great combination of two worlds.
Yeah, it's so random that we even met. Actually, we met in the beginning of the pandemic, and she hadn't been to a club in 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And her friend, it's called Carla Durich, she was DJing at Nordstern, and they had been
in Basel.
And they had been hanging out all summer, and I hadn't been to a club because it's the first time there's a club open in the pandemic, or kind of starting of the pandemic. And my friends were like, I'll come down, and I never really come down more than an hour early. It's kind of funny, when I go to DJ, I'm like always sober. I can show up an hour early, and then I go home and kind of like whatever. As my friends are there, then we go out and party. But that's like, I think, the tale of everyone. When you see your friends, it gets a little wild. But my friends own the club, and they're like, come down early. So I was like, all right, I'll come down. It's a sunny day. We're having some drinks. And I saw this woman across the room, and now we're married and have a kid. And it was the only time she would have been in a club ever. And that small moment of fate has kind of led to my life now. It's
meant to be, I'd say.
Yeah, it's really meant to be. It's crazy.
Nice.
Beautiful sun.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Circling back to the food topic, as you said, you initially planned to also cook.
Yeah, but I had like a restaurant for a long time. I was the three-time champion at the AD DJ cookout. I was the best DJ cook. Me and Kolsch.
Legendary.
Yeah, Kolsch and I were both three-time champions, and we were supposed to have a duel, and he declined. So I guess that makes me the winner. No, I'm not joking. No, so yeah, that's like a whole thing. I'm really into food. I love to eat. I just made an incredible meal before I came here for my wife.
So what did you do?
I did this really nice like chicken. There's a great butcher by me in Prenzlauerberg on Greifswalder Straße, a Fuhland or something like that. I got this like really organic chicken, and then did it with like, I got these, there's this place here called Frische Paradies. Yeah. Well, so I went there and got some lemons and some other stuff, at least Amalfi Coast lemons, and had that with the chicken. Then made this like white wine lemon sauce. Was like, oh, so tasty. I'm like, oh. Berlin, actually, the food's gotten a lot better since I lived here in like the early 2000s to now.
Maybe also your skills got better.
My skills are cooking, but also the restaurant scene here is really nice.
What's your favorite dish of all time?
My favorite dish of all time. That's hard to say. I'm a sauce guy. Anything that's saucy kind of like draws me in. I mean, it depends. I mean, one thing about DJing is I've had the incredible opportunity to be able to experience and travel around the world for, you know, 15 years.
To have incredible DJ dinners everywhere.
Yeah, DJ dinner. Also, I'm like really go out on my own and kind of explore. I mean, I'm really... I'm like, can you take me somewhere local, you know, and try to eat the most local food as possible. And that's something that, like, it's incredible because it kind of shows you, I mean, food and music are these two things in life that really are the commonalities of every culture, you know. People always look at all these differences that we have as people and whatever, but the more you travel, the more you see that humans are basically exactly the same. And the one thing that we all have in common is we love to have food with our friends, from Saudi Arabia to any China to, you know, Timbuktu or whatever. The core basis, I think, of a humanity is to eat, right? We need to eat to survive, to have some, you know, from a tribe in the Amazon to anywhere. That's what we do as people. And once you kind of see that and experience that with different people all around the world, you see how kind of ununique everyone is, you know, and kind of similar everyone is. And also, I think with dance floors, you have the same experience in seeing that, you know, no matter what country I'm in, or you know, no matter what their political or ideological views are, you know, you put on a fucking kicking song, people are happy to dance, you know, and you know, hug their friends and be in this kind of incredible moment. And I think that's something incredibly special. And it's funny because so many DJs are really into food and music. It kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if that's the reason why so many DJs are into cooking. I mean, Richie Houghton got his sake
bar. Dubfire
is really into food. He's
really into baking bread at the moment. That's his thing.
Really?
Yeah, he got really into baking bread over the pandemic. He's like, yo, check out this new loaf I have. He's like traveling around with like bread cultures. That's like, I think a lot of it, like you said, are techno dinners. At some point you get really into it, but not every DJ, you know. Some DJs don't go out to dinner at all or eat like, you know, steaks well done, you know, and it's like a bit of a funny one, you know. But I think for people who are, again, like addicted to culture, you know, and collecting, and that's the one thing that I found through music that is the most rewarding from this job and this life, is I'm a culture addict. At the end of the day, I'm addicted to seeing art and people and experiencing things and how people live and, you know, all these things. During the pandemic, being in one place was kind of, I got stuck in America, which is kind of funny. Actually, it was really interesting because I'd been away from America for so long and kind of Europeanized myself, and then being back in my own country and having to
reconnect with my own
culture was like really far out. I was like, well, it's fucking crazy here. It's like Black Lives Matter, all this. I was like, what the fuck happened in America? Sorry, I don't feel allowed to cut. Oh, it's a podcast, I can say whatever I want. But you know, but yeah, no, it was like this whole moment of kind of re-seeing that culture. And you know, in LA, the food truck scene and this crazy Mexican and immigrant culture, you know, you could get anything. In America, you can eat any food that you want. It's like so incredible. I mean, I'm always looking for a good Mexican here. I don't know if you guys know any place like a real fucking taco. Oh my God, I would kill for a taco.
Yeah, they opened up a new one on Schoenhaus Alley.
Yeah, they're always opening a new one, but they're never like...
Stay there.
There is one by Club de Visionnaire on, I forgot the name of the street, when you kind of go towards Kreuzberg.
Little shout out to the food community in Berlin.
The rising food community. Oh man, I had this one horrible taco here though. It was fucking, always people were like, this taco place is great. And I had a El Pastor, if anyone knows. It's like this marinated pork with like a pineapple on. Then they gave me like ground beef. I was like, what the fuck? Like this chunky, I don't know. Sorry. Little tangent there that doesn't really need to be in this podcast, but we'll leave it to go. Food and traveling and culture.
But I think also the opportunity to connect directly with somebody local is really great.
Yeah,
and that also brings you, like, as you said, the joy to really enjoy and really discover the culture.
It brings you more home, you know, and kind of like, I mean, I think so much we forget that we're human, right? And everyone looks to identify themselves as one thing or another, especially now identity politics and, you know, classification is so big. I'm this, I'm that, you know, where when you travel around the world and kind of like do what I do, you know, I think when you're younger, you want to identify yourself as something, you know, and I think when you're older, it's more about principles and values rather than self-identification, you know. When I was younger and even pre-baby, I had all these like righteous ideas of, you know, I'm right, you're wrong type of situation, or, you know, this politically is right. And how can, and now I got a kid and other things, and my whole perspective on that has changed, you know, even within right now, the whole kind of culture wars that we're experiencing within the pandemic, you know, mask, anti-mask. I mean, I'm a very pro-vax, very pro-mask person, you know, but I also have some friends who are not, you know, and at some point I realized that, you know, no matter what their choices are, and even though I may not agree with them, that does not make them bad or, you know what I'm saying, wrong within their kind of own value and choice, you know? And I think within a free society, everyone should be able to have their choice. Now, I do think that not getting a vax is harmful for the rest of society, you know? But that is my opinion, you know? Yeah. And that is an opinion that I hold true. As long as if you're not putting other people in danger, you can have your own opinion. I had a friend who just died from COVID for not getting a vax, and it's very sad. And we tried to get him to get vaccinated and he didn't. And, you know, his son lost a father. And that's very sad. But that was also their choice, you know, due to their politics and their religion and some other things, you know, that led them in that decision. And, you know, that's something that, like, I think, again, going back to the more you kind of view culture, and the older you get, the less I feel now that, like, why does your opinion matter? That's a thing, you know. Opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one, right? And, like, you know, at some point, thinking your asshole is nicer than someone else's, they're all brown, right? At some point. So unless you bleach it, you know. So, I mean, obviously, like, I'm very against hate speech and, you know, any type of discrimination towards any group. You know, those opinions, I think, are something that as a society, you know, we should not allow, you know, or whatever. We should, you know, I'm very much anti-fascist in many ways, and I will forever fight for that opinion, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think we've seen the consequences of fascism, you know.
So especially that, in Germany.
You can see it on the wall. But, like, those, there's some things worth fighting for. But, and then there's other things, especially in America and other kind of parts of the world where, it's just people need to give a few fucks less.
Yeah. But speaking about your about America and about getting more into, let's say, work for the community or for the social community, in a recent interview with BeePortal, you've been talking about your work with Dr. Cornel West.
Yeah.
Maybe can you like give us insights about what you're working on with him?
Well, so Dr. Cornel West has launched actually a house record label with a friend of mine, this guy, Brandon Lucas, new producer, kind of trying to promote the idea of black culture through house music. I mean, at some point historically, and even at some point, house and techno music is kind of was a minority black and Latino gay culture or kind of black culture from Detroit and Chicago, you know, in New York. That's how it happened. You know,
that is. I had Honey Dijon as a guest.
Yeah, honey will let you know. honey is not afraid to tell you the truth. That's my girl, and, you know, big shout out to Honey out there. But she will let a motherfucker know. You know,
no, she did. I mean, I can definitely recommend listening to.
Yeah,
I will do. It was really nice. It was a lesson for me as I learned a lot.
And I think with the kind of normalization or the some people can say gentrification of dance music, but let's say the popularization, I think, is a better turn of that. You know, people had forgotten in many ways of the history of
the
dance
roots.
Music roots, you know, and I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, you look at, what's that Daft Punk song that has names all the legends and stuff. They're all people from Detroit and Chicago or New York, right? Or, you know, you look at Paul Johnson, who tragically passed this year, you know, who I think has the craziest discography in all of house music ever, you know, for the fact that he had to be touring and wasn't as celebrated as he was.
Yeah.
And so many other black artists all fall under that kind of same situation. And, you know, and there's a lot of new great artists, great or whatever, but, like, when the identity of, let's say I'm from Detroit, the identity of techno has become this thing that's very detached from, let's say, an original notion of techno and the futurism and the soul of that music, you know, or even the knowledge that black people, even within the black community, were behind a lot of this music. is something that like deserves to be spoken about and also to be recognized. You know, I remember some years ago, the Martinez brothers and I had started this record label called Tuskegee, right? Which was about kind of, because at one point we were around, we were really good friends or whatever, and we were looking around our peers and we're like, wow, there's not so many of us, you know? Yeah. Like, like they're from New York, I'm from Detroit, you know, and there like was kind of like a few of us, you know, but like from a scene that at one point was like predominantly, you know, Black and Hispanic or like whatever, to being like a handful of people. We're like, oh, let's start a label to be kind of like, yeah, just focus on and try to put out music from minorities. And then when the record label was coming out, I know some record shops here were like, we won't take your records. It's racist to only focus on putting out music from minorities. And we're like, how is that racist?
I mean, the other way around was still there, like, the whole time.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, just because just because we're trying to put out music from minorities, how is that reverse racism? No, it's just like, and now, I mean, I think the climate has changed a lot, and you know, that there's a lot of other people who are doing that. And I'm actually, we had stopped with the label for a little bit for the pandemic, and now we're bringing it back. But it's funny how, like, at some point, if as a minority, if you even mention kind of racism or, you know, like, it's not even racism, like even a lack of perspective with some things, then people get so uptight, you know. And it's like, look, I mean, my wife is a white from Switzerland, you know. It's like, I'm not that guy, but also at the same time, I'm, you know, very aware of my kind of both ethnic history and the musical history, and that's something that I want to celebrate, you know. And it shouldn't be wrong to want to celebrate one's history or celebrate the history of dance music. And it's not trying to exclude people, it's just trying to bring some kind of focus in on what that idea may be. And I think within any any concept that you have, let's say if you launch a record label for women or for LTGBQ plus, I don't know, I'm sorry, plus sign party hat, I don't know what the whole thing is. If you do something with the intention of one community to celebrate that, it should be okay, and it should be accepted and celebrated, you know? And that's something that I think is so unique within electronic music culture, with the supposedly that we're supposed to be very progressive in so many ways and in a very open culture, and also within independent music labels and ideas, we have the space and ability to create really small identity-driven ideas, you know what I'm saying? That are, again, I believe that the dance floor should be open for everyone, you know? But the concept within why you're creating like electronic beats has a concept behind it, or any concept should be viewed as equal or like as open and possible, you know, whatever that concept may be, you know? So that's, you know, if you want to have a hard techno, like Aryan concept, I'm not saying that, you know, it's like, it's your choice to do that if that wants to be your thing, you know, it's not Detroit techno, but, you know, and I think that sometimes within electronic music, as liberal as we claim that we are, there are still some things that aren't so open, you know what I'm saying? And so people are so fast to create some type of judgment with things, where again, I think people should be a bit more open, because if there is some type of progressive movement that is driving society, then electronic music is the single-handedly most progressive and responsive kind of movement of the 20th and 21st century. And that's something that we need to accept and, you know, really take in our hands to kind of push the notion of what society can become, because the futurism of which dance music was based on was for a utopian future, you know? And I think, again, with the popularization of dance music and, let's say, the identities of kind of being more like kind of brand and, you know, let's say luxury driven in some ways, we lose some of the identities. Because when I started going out to raves, it was very uncool, right? It was like
it was
all
not mainstream, not commercial.
It was freaks and geeks, and like, you know, you were not the cool kid in school going to raves, showing up, and you know, fucking, you know,
it was special interest.
Yeah, very special interest. You know, you know, it's like, you know, coming to school in like 26-inch bottom rave pants and whatever. People were like, you're a freak, you know, or like you're gay, or like this or that, you know. And it's like, and it was like, you're like, that was the point of being into that, because you were not part of the main.
Yeah.
You weren't a jock. You weren't like this or that. You're like, I'm other. You know, that was a very kind of 90s concept, to be other, to be grunge, to be outside of, to be, I call it the slacker hero, right? That's the cool thing. Me and my friends say that, like, the slacker hero was such a thing when we were growing up. And now it's cool to be, you know, something else. And, you know, a lot of my friends fall in that category and they're great people, but that's not something I've always subscribed to. You know, I've always thought that the idea of otherness is like so unique and intriguing, but also otherness shouldn't come with a barrier to anyone else wanting to enter other, you know, as well as mainstream shouldn't exclude the other. So like, exactly, that's the whole kind of idea of where the dance floor meets. It's like, you know, there's this famous line from one of the world's first tattoo parlors. And it's like, where the elite and underworld meet, you know? And the dance floor is very much that same kind of idea, right? You know, on the Circle Loco dance floor, it's like
the mixture
of everyone, yeah. You know, of every, and I think the best dance floors in the world are the mixture of everyone, you know, some
nobody cares about
what you do outside of the club. That's where Berghain and Panorama Bar are so unique, you know.
Yeah, once you're anonymous, biography about the people you're meeting.
Exactly, no one asks you what you do when you get inside the club. You know?
They're just asking what you're doing now.
Yeah, if you're in the dark room, no one's asking you what you do. No. You know? maybe what you do other, I don't know, whatever. That was a bad joke. But no, I think it's so important that we all look at that kind of idea and reopen the acceptance within electronic music culture. And, you know, maybe take a step back from identifying ourselves as this and that, identify ourselves as human, you know?
That's a great line to end.
Yeah,
as
right.
We're facing,
I think so.
The end right now.
Seth, I think it's perfect time, actually.
Perfect timing.
Seth, I actually have to go to the opera. So. Yeah.
That's also the new Seth.
That's the new Seth.
Taking off to the opera.
I'm going to the opera just casually on a Thursday afternoon.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Seth.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
That was my chat with Seth Troxler. It was really fun to experience the straightforward Seth and the fun Seth. Really looking forward to the music he's been working on over the last months. If you enjoyed this conversation, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or text us your feedback on Instagram.
Das war der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast.
Abonniert den Podcast bei Apple, SoundCloud, Spotify oder Deezer.
Wir sehen uns im Club.
Bis dann.